This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Sunday condemned Russian people's quote-unquote cowardly silence as the toll for the missile strike in a tower block in the eastern city of Dnipro reached 30, with 30 other missing. Zelensky noted in his evening address that Ukraine had received many messages of sympathy from around the world in the wake of Saturday's attack. Switching to Russian, he said he wanted to address those Russians, quote, who even now could not utter a few words of condemnation of the terror. Your cowardly silence, your attempt to wait out what is happening will only end with the fact that one of these days the same terrorists will come for you, said Zelensky. U.S. President Joe Biden told Americans to look towards Martin Luther King Jr.'s life for lessons as he became the first sitting U.S. president to speak at a Sunday service in the Civil Rights Leaders Church in Atlanta. Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston has more.
We have to choose a community over chaos.
Joe Biden became the first sitting U.S. president to give a Sunday sermon at Martin Luther King Jr.'s Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta.
These are the vital questions of our time and the reason why I'm here as your president. I believe Dr. King's life and legacy show us the way and we should pay attention.
The remarks come ahead of Monday's national holiday in honor of King, and Biden used the platform to hold up the life of the assassinated civil rights leader as a lesson in repairing deep divisions.
Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston. A plane making a 27-minute flight to a Nepal tourist town crashed into a gorge Sunday while attempting to land at a newly opened airport, killing at least 68 people. This is VOA News. More than 2,700 world leaders will seek solutions for multiple global crises when they convene at the World Economic Forum's annual meeting in the posh Swiss Alpine village of Davos this week. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
After emerging from 3 years of pandemic isolation, delegates once again will be meeting in person. During the week, they will address critical political, economic, and social issues. Klaus Schwab is founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum. Schwab says the erosion of trust between the government and business sectors must be stopped.
One of the root causes of this fragmentation is actually a lack of cooperation.
He says cooperation must be reinforced and conditions for a strong and durable recovery created. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa will no longer attend the World Economic Forum in Davos due to the ongoing energy crisis in the country, his spokesman said on Sunday. Power cuts have worsened since Tuesday when struggling state utility Eskom said it would implement its worst ever outages until further notice. The power cuts are a major source of public frustration with the governing African National Congress and a break on economic growth in Africa's most industrialized nation. Newly empowered U.S. House of Representatives Republicans are demanding the White House turn over all information related to classified documents found at President Joe Biden's home and former office. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The chairman of the House Oversight Committee, James Comer, sent a letter to the president's chief of staff demanding documents and communications related to his lawyer's discoveries of classified information at a Washington office and President Biden's Delaware home. On Fox News Sunday, Texas Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez, with Navy intelligence experience, says
Biden has highlighted his incompetence for the world to see.
And he says he wants to see if there's fallout from the documents not being properly stored, something Democrat Adam Schiff agrees with.
Whether there was an exposure to others of these documents, whether it was harm to national security.
On ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos, Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Police on Sunday said they'd almost finished clearing climate activists from a German village being razed to make way for a coal mine expansion as both sides accused each other of violence. In an operation that began on Wednesday, hundreds of police have removed around 300 activists from the Dune hamlet in western Germany. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Monday, January 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the UK becomes first NATO country to supply Ukraine with Western-made tanks as death toll from Russia's strike grows.
As fighting continues in eastern Ukraine, the United Kingdom's government has confirmed that it will be the first NATO country to supply its ally with Western tanks.
The death toll rises in a Nepal plane crash as authorities investigate cause of the tragedy.
The Yeti Airlines domestic flight was carrying 72 people from the capital, Kathmandu, when it went down in Pokhara in clear weather, according to officials from Nepal's Civil Aviation Authority.
And President Joe Biden calls for lessons on repairing divisions and injustice as he marks Dr. Martin Luther King holiday. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The death toll from a Russian missile strike on an apartment building in the southeastern Ukrainian city of Dnipro has risen to 29, according to the regional governor. Emergency crews that walked through the frigid night scrambled on Sunday to pull survivors from the rubble of the wrecked multi-story building. The deaths reported there were the most civilians killed in one place since September 30th strike in Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia region. Russia also targeted the capital Kyiv and the northeastern city of Kharkiv on Saturday, ending a two-week lull in the widespread airstrikes it had launched since October. Russia on Sunday acknowledged the missile strikes, but did not mention the Dnipro apartment building. The United Kingdom has become the first NATO country to supply Ukraine with Western-made tanks. But what is the, quote, British two-main battle tank, Challenger, and what impact could it potentially have? Matthew LaRotonda, Reuters, reports.
As fighting continues in eastern Ukraine, the United Kingdom's government has confirmed that it will be the first NATO country to supply its ally with Western tanks. A squadron of 14 tanks called the Challenger 2 will deploy to the conflict in the coming weeks. But what is the Challenger 2 and what kind of impact can it have on the war? The Challenger 2 is what's called a main battle tank, or MBT, and it's specifically designed to attack other tanks and armored vehicles, seen here during NATO exercises 2 years ago. Until now, Ukraine's military has primarily relied on its older Soviet-era tanks. It's also captured and repurposed some of Russia's during the invasion. President Zelensky has long pleaded with allied countries to include their tanks in aid packages, but some Western officials have been cautious over the concern that Russia or even China could get their hands on advanced Western military technology. Moscow's also likely to see the introduction of Western tanks onto the battlefield as an escalation of the war, and NATO is desperate not to be drawn more directly into it. The Challenger 2 has been in service with the British Army since 1994 and has been deployed to Bosnia, Iraq, and other crises. The UK's gift could put added pressure on other NATO countries, particularly the US and Germany, to give their own tanks, which have so far resisted. Along with the Challenger 2, Britain's also giving Ukraine about 30 artillery vehicles called the AS-90. It will take time to train the Ukrainian forces on how to use the British tanks and artillery, and Russia's London embassy is dismissing the development. The embassy says the Challengers are unlikely to turn the tide of the war, will drag it out, and will be targeted by Russia's own forces.
That's Matthew LaRotonda of Reuters. Greece says it will press ahead with plans to seal off its land frontiers with neighbor Turkey, tripling the size of a soaring fence already erected in the region. The effort comes as Greece faced a surge in refugee flows in 2022 and as threats of war sound from Turkey, which has aggravated already troubled relations between the two NATO allies. Anthi Karasava reports from Athens.
It's rhetoric like this that has Greece concerned. Speaking during the weekend, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan accused Greece of constantly creating border crises with Turkey. What's more, Erdogan also warned that Turkey, as he put it, can and will plow into Greece one night and take it over. On the other side of the divide and at a separate event, Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis was quick to respond. Greece, he said, does not need anyone telling it how to exercise its own sovereign rights. It will continue to bolster its defenses as it sees fit. Among the most ambitious plans include a soaring steel fence stretching some 160 kilometers, sealing Greece's land frontiers with Turkey. A quarter of that project is already in place. But over the weekend, Mitsotakis went to the border region of Alexandroupolis to oversee a 56-kilometer extension the Greek government says will cost over $100 million. The first leg of that fence was built to stem the rising tide of illegal migration. And while the fence has helped block some 250,000 illegal migrants from entering Greece from Turkey in 2022 alone, according to police data, authorities here fear more will try to make the crossing as elections near in Turkey. UN data for 2022 show illegal entries to Greece tripled compared to the year prior. Such a forecast, officials say, adds to growing tension between NATO allies Greece and Turkey, as both sides remain locked in a heated arms race, mainly over U.S. weapons systems. This week, President Biden is set to ask Congress to approve a $20 billion sale of F-16 fighter jets to Turkey. And while the potential sale will not hamper Greece's purchase of U.S. F-35 fighters, Mitsotakis is advising Capitol Hill to show great scrutiny. How the U.S. Congress will handle an arms sale to Turkey is its own affair, Mitsotakis told reporters. But it should not disregard Turkey's provocative behavior, the Greek leader said, referring to Turkey's recurring threats of war and airspace violations, both serious breaches of NATO alliance rules. Relations between Ankara and Washington have been frustrated by Turkey's refusal to back Finland and Sweden's accession to NATO. But in recent months, those relations have thawed somewhat as Erdogan helped broker an arrangement permitting Ukrainian grain shipments from the Black Sea. Several U.S. lawmakers, including Robert Menendez, who chairs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, remain skeptical. They vow to block the purported F-16 sale this week unless Erdogan takes several steps to show he can uphold Turkey's NATO priorities. Anything less, officials in Athens say, will only aggravate tensions with Turkey and amplify Greece's needs to further bolster its defenses. Anthika Rasava for VOA News, Athens, Greece.
Investigators are probing what led to the crash of a domestic flight in Pokhara, Nepal, that killed at least 72 people on Sunday. It is the small Himalayan country's worst air crash in three decades. Rachel Graham of Reuters reports.
Scores of people were killed on Sunday when a plane crashed in Nepal. The Yeti Airlines domestic flight was carrying 72 people from the capital, Kathmandu, when it went down in Pokhara in clear weather, according to officials from Nepal's Civil Aviation Authority. Footage shows rescuers scouring the wreckage and scorched earth around the site. Nepal's Prime Minister Pushpa Kamal Dahal at Kathmandu's Tribhuvan International Airport said it was a tragic incident and that he'd be calling an emergency cabinet meeting with an ongoing investigation into the cause. A Yeti Airlines spokesman confirmed those aboard the twin-engine ATR-72 aircraft included two infants and four crew members. It was also carrying international passengers, including five Indians, four Russians, one Irish, two South Koreans, one Australian, one French, and one Argentine national. Deadly air incidents are common in Nepal, which has small airports in mountainous terrain, where weather conditions can change quickly. And the European Union has banned Nepali Airlines from its airspace since 2013, citing safety concerns. The Sunday crash is Nepal's worst since 1992, the Aviation Safety Network database showed, when a Pakistan International Airlines Airbus A300 crashed into a hillside upon approach to Kathmandu, killing all 167 people on board.
That's Rachel Graham of Reuters. More than 2,700 world leaders will seek solutions for multiple global crises when they convene at the World Economic Forum annual meeting in the posh Swiss alpine village of Davos this week. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This auspicious gathering includes 52 heads of state, leaders in business, finance, and culture, as well as humanitarians and members of civil society from 130 countries. More than 5,000 Swiss Army soldiers will be on hand to guarantee security and ensure any protests do not get out of hand. The theme of this year's meeting is cooperation in a fragmented world. After emerging from 3 years of pandemic isolation, delegates once again will be meeting in person. During the week, they will address critical political, economic, and social issues that demand urgent attention. Klaus Schwab is founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum. He says this personal interaction will create the necessary level of trust to bring people together.
One of the root causes of this fragmentation is actually a lack of cooperation. This, in turn, increases fragmentation in society and leads even more to short-term and self-serving policymaking. It's a truly vicious circle.
Schwab says the erosion of trust between the government and business sectors must be stopped. He says cooperation must be reinforced and conditions for a strong and durable recovery created. Managing Director of the Forum, Mirek Jusek, says world leaders will be encouraged to work together on such interconnected issues as energy, climate, and nature. He says discussion on the economy and society will take center stage.
On the economy, we're going to be putting a lot of emphasis on infrastructure, and particularly how do we make sure that the investments around infrastructure, particularly around clean energy infrastructure, how do we make sure that this leads to new growth, growth that is more inclusive and makes us more resilient in the future. Of course, we'll also be looking at social vulnerabilities that are stemming from these crises.
Dignitaries attending the meeting include German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, and UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. U.S. President Joe Biden will not be coming to Davos. However, U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Climate John Kerry will be present. A high-level delegation from Ukraine is expected to come to Davos. Forum officials say their names are not being disclosed for security reasons. They say several sessions related to the war in Ukraine will be held. They add Russia is not expected to attend. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, President Joe Biden told Americans to look towards Martin Luther King Jr.'s life for lessons on repairing their divisions, extremism, and injustice. This as he became the first sitting U.S. president to speak at a Sunday service in the Civil Rights Leaders Church in Atlanta. Marking Monday's national holiday celebrating King, Biden delivered a sermon at Ebenezer Baptist Church at the invitation of its pastor, Democratic U.S. Senator Raphael Warnock, centered on a common theme: the country and the world are battling against autocratic forces. The U.S. is at a critical juncture, Biden said, calling it, quote, a time of choosing, unquote. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, has handed over life-saving supplies worth about $300,000 to support Malawi's fight against a cholera outbreak, which has killed more than 700 people, including 104 children, since the outbreak began in March of last year. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The supplies include acute watery diarrhea kits, high-performance tents, antibiotics, and other medicines and medical supplies. The donation follows Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera's December 5 declaration of a public health emergency and appeal for local and international support in the fight against the cholera outbreak. Rudolf Schwenk is the country representative for UNICEF in Malawi.
We will continue to support the Ministry of Health to scale up the cholera response. And we fully appreciate the tireless efforts from frontline health and community workers to manage the influx of cholera cases, with more than 6,200 children already affected and more than 100 deaths. The spread of this outbreak is a threat to the health and well-being of children.
UNICEF says it secured the supplies and chartered a special flight to Malawi with support from the European Civil Protection and Humanitarian Aid Operations. Statistics from the Public Health Institute of Malawi show that as of Thursday, the disease had killed 773 people, including 104 children, and resulted in 23,217 cases since the outbreak started in March last year. Maziko Matemba is Community Health Ambassador in Malawi. He says the supplies come at a time when Malawi is in critical need of them.
This call upon on government and its key stakeholders to find a mechanism on how to prepare emergency of this nature, because they will be keep on coming.
Cholera is an acute diarrheal infection caused by ingesting food or water contaminated with bacteria. The disease affects both children and adults, and if untreated, can kill within hours. The Malawi Ministry of Health says the fatality rate of the outbreak is now at 3.33%, much higher than the recommended 1% global threshold. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Thank you, Lamek. And the official recognized baptism site of Jesus is drawing thousands to Jordan as COVID restrictions drop and the country is boosting religious tourism. The Catholic Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem was at the eastern bank of the Jordan River for the pilgrimage and said, quote, could be a place of unity, quote, as tensions grow in the Middle East. Dale Gavlak reports from Bethany beyond the Jordan.
Jordanian scouts played bagpipes as thousands of festive pilgrims and visitors descended on the site where John the Baptist is believed to have baptized Jesus. The New Testament of the Bible says the event took place on the eastern bank of the Jordan River, known as Bethany beyond the Jordan, or in Arabic as Al-Maqdis. Three Catholic popes, St. John Paul II, Benedict XVI, and Francis, have all visited and prayed at this UNESCO World Heritage site. Rustam Ekjalian is the Director General of Jordan's Baptism Site Commission and explain to VOA the area's importance.
The Baptism Site of Jesus Christ is a World Heritage Site that belongs to mankind. We Jordanians are the custodians. Without the care and custodianship of the Hashemite family led by His Majesty, we would never have achieved what's been achieved by now through the recent history of the rediscovery of the site. Everybody on earth deserves to visit the site and walk in the trails of John and Jesus.
For centuries, the area has been commemorated as the site of Jesus' baptism by John the Baptist. But over the years, Roman and Byzantine churches, a monastery, hermit caves, and baptismal pools were destroyed by earthquakes and the river's flooding, and the location became uncertain. Starting 25 years ago, after the area between Jordan and Israel was cleared of landmines from Arab-Israeli conflicts, archaeological discoveries reaffirmed the traditional site. Jordan now wants to develop an adjacent area to provide more services to visitors, enabling them to have a longer stay, but it needs funding. The Catholic Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Archbishop Pier Battista Pisabella, says the baptismal site could be inspirational in the search for peace in the Middle East and other places where divisions have taken hold.
Unfortunately, seeing in all Middle East, a lot of tensions, divisions, borders, barriers, while we think that our future is to be united in our diversities. This place for all. And we hope that this place could become a small example that peace, if we want, is possible here.
Jordanian banker Basil Ishtara, visiting the site, told VOA that Jordanians would love for everyone around the world to join us in this special place of prayer. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Bethany beyond the Jordan.
This is Science in a Minute.
Black holes, because of their very nature, can remain hidden in space forever. According to NASA, astronomers usually spot them when a star moves close enough to one for some of its material to be captured by the black hole's intense gravity, producing X-rays in the process. Scientists, using 15 years of data from the space agency's Chandra X-ray Observatory and optical data from the ground-based Sloan Digital Sky Survey, have been able to spot hundreds of black holes that, until now, have been hidden in the darkness of space. NASA says the newly unmasked black holes are supermassive-sized that have a mass of millions or even billions of times that of the Sun. Supermassive black holes are found at the center of galaxies. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Junior Duffa in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
An editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the third Monday of each January, Americans honor the memory of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Dr. King was a Baptist minister from the southern state of Alabama and a leader in the fight against racial inequality in the United States. On January 15th, he would have celebrated his 94th birthday. The 100 years or so that began in 1865 with the end of the U.S. Civil War and the ratification of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which outlawed slavery, and the upheavals of the late 1960s when hundreds of thousands of Americans took to the streets to demand civil rights protections for politically underrepresented groups, including racial minorities and women, most of the African American population was subject to so-called Jim Crow laws. These were state and local statutes that legalized racial segregation and blatant discrimination, which were then violently enforced by government authorities and civilian vigilante groups. African Americans who sought to change this system of virtual apartheid were met with disproportionate violence that all too often resulted in the activist's death. In this atmosphere, Dr. King, who adhered to Mahatma Gandhi's doctrine of nonviolent protest, led his followers in staging mass action boycotts, sit-ins, peaceful marches, and other nonviolent acts of civil disobedience. The frequently extreme retaliation against the protesters only served to demonstrate to the rest of the country the urgent need for change. Dr. King's and the civil rights movement's years-long push for more equitable treatment under the law culminated in the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which outlawed segregation in public places as well as employment discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, gender, or national origin. Dr. King did not have the luxury of time to enjoy the fruits of his labor. He was assassinated on April 4, 1968, at the age of 39. Nonetheless, within a decade, segregationist laws were repealed, and today discrimination is a reviled and legally punishable offense. Today, people of all backgrounds continue that march, raising their voices to confront abuses of power, challenge hate and discrimination, protect the right to vote, and access quality jobs, health care, housing, and education, said President Joe Biden. On this day, we reflect on the legacy of a man who issued a call to the conscience of our nation and our world.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.